Howdy, everyone. This is Kurt here at the beginning of the podcast, and I just wanted to give you a special announcement of events, of live events happening in the month of March 2024. Easter weekend, that is the last weekend in March, the 29th through the 31st, I am going to be at the very first inaugural FateCon TTRPG experience that's going to be happening at the Bob Duncan Center in Arlington, Texas. If you remember from my episode with the Five-Sided Fates, they talked about this con that they were putting on. It's exclusively for Dungeons and Dragons. It's a way to help introduce the hobby to people who may not know about it, and to help provide games for people to be able to hop in and join and play. And because I was so intrigued by it, I applied. And so I'm happy to announce that on Friday, the 29th, I will be doing a live podcast episode. So I'm very excited about that. Can't wait to get that done and to see everyone at FateCon to be able to record that episode. As well as on Saturday, the 30th, I am going to be running two different games. That's right. I'm going to be running a level 13 and a level 15 one-shot. The level 13 one is based on our character, Levity Butterleaf, from the podcast. And I'm adapting an MCDM production, Where Evil Lies, solo boss monster encounter. So you're going to get to fight Magnus the Vampire. Can you capture him alive? Ooh. And then the other level 15 game that I'm going to be running is going to be called Hallowed Be Thy Name, and it is a undead horde meat grinder game in which you are defending the last zone in a line to hold back the undying horde. You know, can you survive waves and waves of skeletons and zombies and who knows what other sorts of undead nasties may come your way? So if you would like to get tickets for the games that I'm running on Saturday, you can definitely sign up and do that. And I believe the podcast live recording episode is just going to be, hey, you show up and you're there. Again, the podcast is live recording is happening on Friday, the 29th at 7 p.m. Central. And then I'm running two different games on the Saturday, one in the morning and one in the afternoon. So if you want to be able to get a badge, a single day badge, $30. Or if you want to be able to go all 3 days of the event, $50. And that is a great bargain for a local to the DFW area convention. Or, you know, if you want to make a travel for the weekend, then I would encourage you to do that to my neck of the woods. So if you want to learn more and you want to buy your ticket, you want to sign up for a game with me, or you want to catch a live recording of the podcast, please go to the website, FiveSidedFates.com. Again, FiveSidedFates.com. Get your badges, which are on sale now. $30 for a single day, $50 for the whole weekend. Loads of other great DMs and vendors and events and things to do, and I can't wait to see you there.
Hark, the Bardic Paladin, who sings and plays again. He tells the tales of glory and weaves a magic story. He'll join you at your table and ask you to share a fable. Heroes of humble origin, villains who must be fought again. No matter their skill or prowess, the people in life are countless. So we pray you heed our request. Enjoy this tale of sidekicks and side quests.
Sidekicks and side quests.
And side quests.
Sidekicks and side quests.
Episode 123, Pyrex and the Ultimate Egg. Welcome to Sidekicks and Side Quests, the Dungeons & Dragons podcast that helps to put humans back into humanity and breathe life into your campaign NPCs with backstory and bravado. That's right, we're building a world, one character at a time. I am your host, Kurt Krenwelge, the Bardic Paladin, and I'll be joining
Mandy Quinn's table in the Levitating Platter.
Hello, and welcome to another exciting episode of Sidekicks and Side Quests, the best unofficial Dungeons & Dragons podcast, in my humbly biased opinion. I've got an awesome guest for you this week, but before I get to my guest, you know I gotta do it. I gotta leave you in suspense with the first ad read. This episode is brought to you by my first sponsor, Plus1 EXP, and their brand new monthly subscription service for RPG Zine Club. Of course, you've heard me talk about this service. It's a monthly subscription service featuring fresh zines from emerging and expanding creators across the globe. Our way of inviting GMs, players, and zine lovers everywhere to invest more intentionally in the creative community. It's crowdsourced support without crowdfunding. You're getting two 20 to 44 page Saddle Sitch zines. You can pick from story zines, adventure zines, or both. You have the ability to get print and digital or just digital. There is an exclusive Clubhouse Discord channel within Plus1 EXP Discord community. You're getting the best prices. You have the ability to manage your subscription portal, and you can add products or change your information. You have the ability to change your frequency of how often you're wanting to be receiving new zines and titles, and you can get what you want. In fact, if you miss something cool and you want to get it, you can add it to your recent month's order in order to get a copy of it. You get a special surprise gift each February after your first anniversary. Again, you're getting access to interviews, how to play videos, and special content for Zine Club titles. And if you get one of our RPG Zine Club passports, you can redeem it for a slice of pizza at a convention that Tony's attending if you fill that passport up. Again, we're sourcing the best voices from across the RPG design community. We curate zines based on the community interest and feedback to help you discover your new favorite creators. It has DIE focus because, you know, Plus1 is committed to championing diversity, inclusion, and equity in projects. Creators with diverse experiences make our community better. So Zine Club prioritizes creating equity for all our creators. Your subscription will allow Plus1 EXP to more heavily invest in print partners and provide them with potentially life-changing support by consolidating scores or hundreds of purchases as the club grows. So I could sit here and read more and more, and I think the best source to learn more about this awesome program to sign up for yourself is if you go to the website rpgzine.club. Again, rpgzine.club. It's part of the website plus1exp.com, which again, if you're going to go on that site and buy yourself a beard balm, a lip balm, RPG for beards or whatnot, and you're looking for an affiliate code to use on that site, be sure to use the code Randolph at checkout to save some coin on your purchase at no extra cost to you. Again, the code is Randolph at checkout on the website, plus1exp.com, and make sure you check out the brand new monthly subscription service for rpgzine.club. I am so excited to be able to introduce this next contestant, this next guest on the podcast to you. So without further ado, hello, mystery contestant. Would you care to introduce yourself? Tell us who it is that you are and what is it that you do?
Hello, I am Mandy Quinn. Mall Mannequin. The alliteration is part of the joy.
I see.
I am a little guy on the internet, as very many other people are, but mostly I'm an illustrator and an animator.
Oh, wow. That's really cool. Is there anything that you've done that we might recognize or know your work from?
Aside from my own streaming art and other random doodles and bobs. Mm-hmm. I did work on an animated television show for a couple seasons by the name of Archer.
Ooh.
And that was a very fun learning experience. But aside from that, I worked with making like packaging and other printed art before then. But yeah, that's the only thing of note that I've done.
Well, I mean, that's really cool. I remember, you know, oh my goodness, years, like, Whenever back in ye olden days, you know, within the last 20 years or so, when Archer debuted on FX and stuff like that, it seems like a lifetime ago. Like, I feel like the prime of my college years is when it came out, because I was in college roughly between 2006 to 2011 was my undergraduate. And then I stayed for a couple more years to finish up with a master's. But
Does that sound about right when it started? Because were you on the whole time or just part of the time?
Just the part of the time in the later years. But yeah, it started in 2009.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. So H. John Benjamin is when everyone was like, wait a minute, that's what your voice sounds like, but that's what you look like in real life? I was not expecting that.
Yeah, the ancient times.
Yes, the ancient times. Well, wonderful. That's awesome. So the love of art obviously had to have come before that. So is that kind of, as I creatively work to segue it into the next question of, you know, with you currently, or have you played Dungeons and Dragons before? Like, did the art lead into that, or were they hand in hand, or how did that all work out?
I have played Dungeons and Dragons a whole bushel. In fact, I am currently in 3 campaigns simultaneously. A wild ride.
Wow.
Dermatologists hate me. Friends think I'm crazy. But aside from that, the art definitely does play into it. When I was in art college, I had a friend that was really interested in tabletop RPG and played this. We did like a couple sessions of different things here and there, but he really enjoyed like testing things out.
Mm-hmm.
But Dungeons and Dragons came, I think, about 5 or 6 years ago. And I was in a Saltmarsh campaign for my very first campaign. And that was very fun.
Wow. Okay. I've never actually been in that particular setting or run the Ghosts of Saltmarsh adventure. But was that a very enjoyable campaign for you?
Absolutely. I wanted to get a good grade in D&D, which isn't actually a thing. just like you try to get a good grade in like therapy or something. That's not why you're there, but
right.
I was like, yes, I'm a chatty Cathy. Let me choose a nonverbal type of character, which is a Kenku who has to use mimicry for speech. And as one does, I made an Excel spreadsheet for all of the verbiage that she had acquired from Oliver. It had things like who had said it, what intonation it was said in, and I would refer to that sheet whenever I wanted to like say anything, and it made for some funny moments. But she was a ranger that I multiclassed into barbarian, and we made it to level 20, which was that's the only time I've ever made it to level 20. So
whoa. That's amazing. Yeah, I've not made it to 20 in a 4th edition or a 5th edition game. But one day we'll get there, we hope.
Absolutely.
Yeah, no, that sounds great. I know on this particular podcast, we've had like 2 Kenku NPC characters that have been made. And so it's interesting coming into the philosophy behind the mimicry. It's like, oh, are you only stuck doing mimicry? Or does your game homebrew it where it's like, oh no, they're, you know, they can talk. It's just like, they just have the uncanny ability to be able to do all the mimicry and stuff like that, which at first I would have come into it like, no, they can only do mimicry. But as I've, played more games and had more podcast interviews and stuff, I'm like, you know, I think it is cool that they can talk. They just have that really good uncanny ability to be a perfect ventriloquist, if you will.
Yeah, I think the fun of it is getting creative with how they do and don't speak. So one of the things that I had thought of for another character, another Kenku, was that they had been sent to school really early on, and there was actually intensive like training and teaching to give them speech via these people that are like donating vocabulary, so to speak. And with that uncanny ability to mimic and remember and repeat, if enough words are given, you have enough to work with. And so at that point, then he had enough of a vocabulary to just speak pretty much normally as anyone else would. But it's still through this really intense, like learning period, almost like a degree he had to earn to speak common fluently, so to speak.
Oh, wow. A common major at university. There we go. Yeah.
It's like, I studied English in university. It's like that same thing.
I was going to say the other way, or rather the way that I was introduced to following you on social media, not necessarily the Mandy Q, which you did gladly share with me. And now I am following that on social media, so I can hype that up all the time. But you did a really cool and fun, interesting mashup between Dolly Parton as different D&D characters based on her album covers. That's where I fell in love with the art style, was like, oh, this is a fun account. I need to follow this artist because your career shows great promise and we will follow it with interest, kind of a thing.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I love Dolly Parton and I really like D&D. just a modest interest in D&D, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Just kidding. It's taken over my life. But yeah, I was thinking about something to put in a portfolio. And so I kind of mashed two good loves together. And I thought there was so much potential in the magic of her music and also making cool armor and weapons and all sorts of fun stuff. So that,
well,
that
now
was really
she's
fun.
Done a rock album. So you can totally do a barbarian variant now, I suppose.
Absolutely. Yeah. She's just a peach. She's one of the gems we have to hold on to in the society that we're living in currently. And it was very fun to draw her. It was a lot of time. A lot of effort.
There's a couple of people in my my personal opinion that I feel like represent America. Like if you had to be like America's grandma and grandpa, I forgot how the combinations were, but at least I remember one of America's grandpas was Mr. Rogers. In fact, part of my music fraternity, Phi Mi Alpha Sinfonia, Betty White was one of the grandmothers, and then Dolly Parton was the other one. So I was like, you know, the exemplifies the best in America.
Hard agree.
Yeah, hard agree. There we go. Now it'll elude me as I try and figure out who was the other grandpa. Take that out of context and then share that all over to promote this episode. Who knows? But before we dive off on too many tangents, too many different side quests, I have to ask for the namesake of the show, who has been one of your favorite NPCs or sidekick characters, whether it's been from one of your tabletop games, RPG, video game, movie, film, television, etc. And even though you might be tempted to pick Archer, I'd be very curious if you did, but why has this particular sidekick character or NPC stuck with you?
I'm currently in a Waterdeep campaign. It's the only campaign I've ever been in that is in person 100%.
Mm.
A rarity for me because everything else has been with an online group. And so we started off with the Dragon Heist campaign, and now we're into the Tome of the Mad Mage. So we've been in Undermountain for like a year, but it's only been weeks in the game.
Right.
But there's one fella who runs a very particular shop in Waterdeep. It's Zoblob's hobby shop. And so Zoblob, I am unaware if he is an actual character in the book or if my DM was just having a really good time, but he only sells purple items in this shop. They're all purple, only purple. And he's like, "Hello, my name is Zoblob." And it's hilarious every time. And so our party, whenever we go into Zoblob's shop, we pick up and touch almost everything. And it's the same crap. Like, it's all awful things. They're worthless. And we just pick it up and then we ask how much it's worth. And he says it's too much money. And then we put it back down. And we're just an annoyance and a bother in the middle of his day. But one of the items I purchased from him was sheet music. And I said, "Oh, is it magenta precipitation rather than purple rain?" And so now in my inventory, I have sheet music for magenta precipitation, as well as a bunch of random purple items, because my paladin is too good natured not to buy something when we go in.
Mm.
So Zoblob is my favorite NPC just because he's got a weird little shop. He's a weird little guy.
That's awesome. Yeah, no, I was not expecting the quirk of like, oh, everything in the shop is purple. It's like, you know, it feels like driving through some part of America and it's like, what's that interesting roadside I've been seeing billboards for? And then you stop and you're like, oh, so everything's purple. Okay, the advertising was not lying, kind of a
absolutely. Okay. Yeah, it's I don't know if the DM was just like, this shop is just a shop with some weird things in it, or if that's actually written into the book, but it's hilarious every time because you can tell my DM says, "Guys, please don't spend an hour just in Zoblob's shop. Please don't." And we almost always do. But thankfully for Zoblob and my DM, we've been stuck in Undermountain forever. So not a problem anymore.
Well, that just gives me the motivation. Now I have to go hunt down James Hake and see if I can get him on the podcast and then have him, you know, definitively declare whether Zoblob is in fact in the book. And I'll even go check my library and go check it out. And then I'll send you a Twitter DM and let you, well, no, because that'll ruin the surprise, but I'll just let you know whether I looked it up and I will tell you like I just looked it up, and I won't ruin the surprise until you tell me the campaign's over, and then I can let that secret fly. But
excellent. Yes. I'm eager to know someday.
There we go. And same thing. What has been one of your favorite side quests, whether it's been from tabletop RPG, movie, film, television, B plot, literature, stage production, whatever it may be? What's been one of your favorite side quests and why?
That's a really interesting question. That's a good question. There are so many side quests. I'd have to say, weird niche, weird callback, Banjo-Kazooie and Banjo-Tooie. Having to collect almost every single little thing under the sun, Rareware could not decide what they didn't want you to grab. So they said, why not have 15 different things to collect in every different level? And the little guys, I want to call them Junimos, but I know that that's Stardew Valley. That's not. But the little, are they called like Jengas or something? They're little dudes. Hold on. I have the power of the internet in front of me. But collecting the little colorful guys.
Hmm.
I don't know. Junjos, I think, is what they're called.
Okay.
No.
I will take your word for it because
Jinjo.
Jinjo. Okay. Okay. So it sounds like ginger. Okay.
Yeah, they're little. So they're basically little guys, little dudes. And without looking them up, I think little dude is the best way you can equate them. But they're just creepy little guys, and they're all brightly colored, and they just say Jinjo, Jinjo, and they're just there. There's no real explanation as to what they are and why they're there. But you find them and you pick them up and you take them with you. Where do they go? I don't know, but they're around and they have a king or a queen, and she looks scary because it's those Nintendo 64 graphics.
Right.
But they're just little dudes. They're just little guys. And something about them, because the Nintendo 64 was my childhood console for a long time.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. See, I would have said Super Nintendo was mine, like 94. I think is when we moved to Texas. And then the first video game system that my dad bought was Super Nintendo with an included copy of Donkey Kong Country. That was our first video game system we had in our house.
That's a good game to start with. We had Ocarina of Time and Majora's Mask, you know, the 1998 box office blasts of the, wow, it's three-dimensional. And of course, you've got the Mario 64 and the Donkey Kong racing and all that stuff. So
that came out for junior high for me. That's like, because I feel like in my brain, it equates to like going over to a friend's house who, you know, they were a little more affluent. And so they were able to get all these nice things a lot sooner than me and my family. But I seem to remember the haze, like 99. That's like the transition of fourth, fifth grade, maybe starting to go into sixth grade. And that's when Star Wars Episode One and some of the other Star Wars were starting to re-release in anticipation of it. And then Nintendo 64 and Super Mario 64. Like that, and the Mario Kart, of course, original Nintendo 64 Mario Kart, where everyone learned the Rainbow Road trick to like jump across the map and stuff. So,
yeah, a fond time. I don't know if I want to make your bones ache too bad with the.
I'll be sure to take my ibuprofen in the morning tomorrow.
the revelation of 96 being the year that I came into the world. So.
Okay. Yeah. No. Yeah. 88 right here. So there we
not
go.
Not too much of a difference. Not too much, but enough.
Enough.
Enough. But yeah, the GameCube was really my formative. But I mean, we had, you know, the PS1, the original PlayStation, because I had a sibling to share it with. So it wasn't just like one kid getting the one. It's like you get this and you share. And I'm like, all right. But the GameCube was more for me. My brother didn't really care about it. So the Super Mario Sunshine, Luigi's Mansion, a Mario Kart Double Dash, even Spyro, A Hero's Tale, which isn't the best Spyro, but it's a Spyro.
Mm-hmm.
I loved everything on the GameCube. But I still remember the Nintendo 64 very fondly and blowing into every cartridge just to get it to work.
Yep, they started it in the ancient days with NES and even into Super Nintendo, and they were like, please, that's not how you're supposed to do it. It's like, we did it and it worked, so why would we ever stop now?
Yeah, exactly. I'm not going to believe you, even though I know you made the game. It's too late for you now. I'm doing it forever.
And then the way that we like to end the personal interview section is with the question, what are you passionate about and why?
Well, I'm passionate about talking, clearly. Talk your ear off forever. I'm passionate about a lot of things, but I think the thing that binds it all together is people are so ding dang creative. People are so smart and clever and creative and cool. And every time I see somebody make something, I can immediately appreciate all of the heart and effort that went into that. And me imagining what they've done is almost as rewarding as just like seeing the final product or hearing the final product. But like, I don't know, anything from like music to art to games to podcasts and music, like all of those things are like, I don't know, people are just so smart and clever. And I love seeing when they put that out and for the world to see. I don't know. I'm super passionate about that. So I just, creativity is a broad answer, but that's what fuels my fire, so to speak.
Well, there we go. Yeah, no, I think in this day and age, with the rise of the debates and everything around AI, admittedly, for some respects, yeah, sure, AI is great for, you know, crunching something noodly that's like really mundane and it's not super creative. But when we're trying to strive further and further with like, well, let's just take this technology and use it, you know, unethically or not responsibly or not with good guidance and foresight. And we're going to use that now to churn out all of our creative endeavors instead of like a human being taking their heart and soul, you know, themselves or working collaboratively with a team to put something in front of an audience. Yeah, I think we need that same spirit and appreciation for creativity and for beauty in the world. Because, you know, we're made for beauty. We see things in the world. We recognize its inherent goodness and, you know, beauty is the way in. So I think we need more of that.
Well said. I love that.
All right. So we've had a great opening here with the personal interview section that now I think it's time we head into some NPC creation. All right. And NPC creation is brought to you by you, the podcast audience, and our patrons from Patreon. So now is the time of the show where we give a shout out, a loud hurrah to our generous donors, including our queen of the Patreon, Katie Downey, aka Goblin Katie, as well as our other wealthy level patrons, including Anson Jablinski, Nicholas Cardarelli, as well as good old mom and dad Krenwogi. So thank you all so much for contributing. The queen of the Patreon that I mentioned, Goblin Katie, she is at our aristocratic tier, and everyone else is a wealthy patron, which means they all get to introduce an element of chance to our random tables that we get to use in this section. So we might get to hear one of their responses here today. And if you want to learn more about the Patreon and ways to support the podcast, I would totally encourage you to do that. And the way that you're going to do that is by going to my podcast website, going to the show notes below, or just go directly to patreon.com/sidekicks and sidequests. Learn about our accommodations at the Levitating Platter and help us to expand our operations in this demiplane and worlds beyond. So now is the part of the show. We get to make up an NPC. We get to make up our own Zoblob or anyone else that we might today. And so the question is, are we going to be working with like an idea that you've brought? Are we generating randomly with tables or doing a combination of both? Or what are we doing today?
I have so many characters that just sit up in my noodle all the time, but I think a randomly generated one will be super fun and just riffing off of what we get and making that into something interesting.
There we go. And then maybe this character might make a doodly appearance on some streaming, perhaps.
Absolutely.
To be sprinkled into your campaigns or your audience. Your audience, your community that is like hungry for NPCs. Well, you will serve them one on a silver platter, and then you will hear the myths and the legends grow. So
absolutely.
There we go. Okay. So the first question that we ask here is, what is the name of our character? Let's roll a D20 and figure that out.
All right. Let me roll it. I got a solid 11.
Solid 11. All right. And your answer was suggested by my dad, Patreon supporter, Wayne Krenwogi. Pyrex.
Oh, I love that. Very handy and useful. Practical name.
Yes, there we go. Yes, so we're working. So Pyrex, okay, P-Y-R-E-X. So maybe similar to something you might find in the kitchen. But we'll see. We'll see. Could go completely different direction. The next question we have to ask ourselves, what is the ancestry of this character? We generate this by rolling 2d10s for a d100 effect.
Ooh, okay. Let me get my d10s here. All right. I got double zeros and a 50.
Okay, so 50. Okay, so let's scroll. Or wait, 50 or 5?
50. I have my two D10s, my percentages, my percentiles.
Okay, thank you for clarifying, because sometimes you're like, wait a minute, which way is it supposed to go?
Yeah, I think it's just straight up 50.
Perfect. So, Pyrex is a heron gone, a rabbit folk.
Ooh, aw.
All right. And then let's see the next question. What is the job or role in society for Pyrex the Heron Gone? Let's roll a regular D10 and figure that out.
All right. This time I'll grab the D10 and not the percentage one. Honestly, Humblewood was a really fun game to play. All right. 4.
4. Okay. Your answer was provided by previous guest Fenway Jones, egg collector.
Like an Easter bunny. I love that.
Well, how opportune that this episode will be premiering right before Easter. So maybe your new favorite Easter-ish themed sort of NPC.
Yeah.
Okay. And then let's see. Now we need to figure out the age range of the character. So this is a D8 roll for a category age.
All right. Let me roll it. I got a 1.
Child. So we have a child age Heron Gone named Pyrex, that is an egg collector. And when we have all of these key details in mind, at least for the start of the character making, describe the physical appearance. When you hear Pyrex, egg collector, child, Heron Gone, what are you imagining?
Pyrex is, like myself, just a little guy. The runt of the litter, you could say, but a soft, grayish brown, somewhere in the middle, you know, not so gray, not so brown. You ask everybody, they have a different answer for you. Mm-hmm. But one of 53 siblings, one of the younger of the bunch.
Okay.
And his ears are long and floppy and they kind of trail on the ground. So he ties them up. Ooh. With like a ribbon up in the back because they're just so gosh darn long.
Mm-hmm.
And that way, when he bends down to pick up an egg, mm-hmm. he doesn't cover his eyes with his ears and he doesn't drag them on the ground.
I got a specific image in my head, and maybe it was just because, you know, Christmas was only a couple months ago and my son was insistent, or we just showed it to him multiple times. But in the cartoon Frosty the Snowman, the little rabbit character that's in that movie, I think I remember some image, maybe, you know, he's hopping around and he's like trying to be emotive and expressive, but I feel like there was an image of him because he's a tiny rabbit and his big ears are like dragging behind him like you were describing. So I had like that immediate image from Frosty the Snowman, the Christmas movie, pop in as you were describing this little guy.
Oh my gosh, his name apparently was Hocus Pocus.
That's what it was. Yes, Hocus Pocus the rabbit from Frosty the Snowman.
Yes, he's so cute. The red eyes certainly were a choice, but it's I remember him very much. Yeah.
Yeah. Wee, wee. Yeah, little sound effects like that is how Hocus Pocus spoke, I guess.
I love that. Okay.
What got Pyrex into collecting eggs? Is it just like, oh, you know, because the large family and they have to like, they raise hens or chickens and they're like, we need someone to go collect the eggs. You know, we got a lot of mouths to feed in the barrow, the hutch. I feel like I looked this term up just recently and I'm like, a hatch for the
burrow or whatever.
The burrow of where all the heron gons live. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's definitely out of the necessity they have. They're raising those chickens and they probably sell some of their own produce and, you know, they've got a farm stand and all that good stuff. But I like to think that being a youngster and being a runt, all the older siblings hate collecting eggs because the hens can be kind of ornery and peck at your little hands. So they're like, hey, Pyrex, you go off and you collect the eggs for us. We don't want to do that. Or it's so much fun, Pyrex. It's a great job, Pyrex. And he's like, yeah, that sounds great. I don't know any better. And he goes in there and he gets his little hands pecked. But I like to think that over time, he befriends the hens and it becomes one of his favorite things to do every day.
So he's like a chicken whisperer.
a hen whisperer, yeah.
A hen whisperer. Oh, what was it? I'm sure there was some viral video that went around of like the little boy that like hugs the chicken. Is that how we're imagining Pyrex? He's like, this is Henrietta. She's my friend.
Yes, I know exactly the video you're talking about. Just this little boy just on the ground hugging this little chicken. I love that.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Cool. I dig. Okay. So yeah. So families supporting, you know, with eating the eggs and being able to sell some. So are you imagine? So this isn't necessarily maybe like a Feywild sort of Herengon. It's like mundane world, and this is just a very agrarian society hamlet we find ourselves in, and then we're meeting Pyrex with all the family selling the eggs or just going about his day or something.
Yeah, I feel like they've found their way somewhere along the Sword Coast, tucked off in a suburban side grove of some sort. Not close to anything major, but not too far as to be limited on their resources.
Okay, all right. All right, so I'm getting an idea. So kind of to help us go along as we're discovering the character, we like all of our NPCs on this podcast to have something valuable on them. So that can be a valuable item, a piece of lore, a secret, or an ideal or concept that the character ascribes to. So you can, this is a combo roll. So we're going to do a D4 for the category and then the D6 for the particular thing.
Excellent. All right. I've got my D4 and my D6. Dice ASMR. I've got a 5 for the D6 and a 3 on the D4.
Okay. So a 3 on the D4 and then a 5 on the D6.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, interesting. All right, so your answer, this is a secret, by the way. The secret today was provided by previous guest Matthew J. Hansen. Apparently, Pyrex is a relative of one of the player characters.
Oh my goodness. That's cute.
So, immediate tie-in to your next campaign if you have a Herengon character. Yeah, I mean, it could go any number of ways, I suppose.
Yeah, we played... We didn't get to finish it, but we played a Candlekeep game.
Mm.
And there are quite a few notable Herengon characters in Candlekeep. So I like to think that maybe he's a distant cousin to forgetting his name, but he's like a folk hero with a long scarf. He's a Herengon. It's a Feywild folk hero. So maybe they're like distant cousins.
That's cool. Okay. I like that. Okay. So easy way to incorporate this character. They are some sort of relative of one of your player characters in the campaign. So there you go. Easy enough. And then, of course, all of our sidekicks, all of our NPCs on this podcast need to be able to offer a side quest. That's why we're putting them in your game, populating your world. So let's roll a D12 and figure out what is going to be the quest. What is going to be the thing that they need to do for our dear little Pyrex.
I've rolled a 2.
Okay, excellent. Your answer was provided by previous guest Bobby Angel. Get the sunstone from the nearby canyon.
Easy enough.
Care to explain what that means for little Pyrex?
Of course. You see, the sunstone looks an awful lot like an egg. And what is the epitome of the warmth of a hen's backside, incubating the egg, the sunstone? He really wants that sunstone so that he can keep the coop warm in all seasons. And it just looks like any other egg. So, you know, it's nice. You can tuck it in there and it's, you know, an inconspicuous way to heat and keep their coop warm. He has a very innocent intention for this sunstone, which is probably very powerful, but
I'm kind of interested in your take on this apparently legendary sunstone. I was getting an image of, like, there was a DLC I think for Fable 2 where it was the island that was controlled, that had like control of different seasons depending on where, if you went to some temple on the island and you shifted it would change the season of the island. So I was like, oh, is this sunstone in the canyon specifically because it like helps with the sun in the area? So if they take it out of there, it's going to like, you know, affect the land or something like that? Or what are we thinking?
It probably will have catastrophic repercussions. He is a child and has no real knowledge of the world. And so he says, I've heard in a book of this stone that represents the sun. And I just, my world is just this, pretty much this farm and this coop. And so I really want you to go off it and risk life and limb for this incredible thing I read in a book without any knowledge of you just completely destroying the environment around it by removing it.
Ooh, okay. So, wow. I don't think we've at yet of, you know, starting season five off strong here of the podcast. It's interesting now to have a side quest that's being introduced that could potentially drastically change the landscape of the local area. So, you know, if you're cool with this, I'm cool with exploring this too. So, okay. So the sunstone is in the canyon specifically for, you know, the weather, the climate, the environment of the local area. So it was intentionally put there. Yes. By like great heroes of the past, the gods, or are you just gonna leave that open-ended, do you think?
I think it's good to have a little bit of a mystery. The book he would read, he got it from the library in town. You know, some nice old librarian said, well, make sure to return it in 14 days, sonny, or else you'll get a late fee. And he's like, I don't have that kind of cash. It's like, you know, some copper pieces, maybe even some towels if you want to get into the Waterdavian currency. Ooh.
Mm.
but yeah, he's like, that's cool, thanks. And you know, he's so engrossed in this book, maybe some of the pages of the book are missing, so you don't really know where it came from, you know. Okay. Some sort of further mystery for another party to stumble upon, but he's just concerned with his chickens
planted by the evil guys. It was like, mayhaps. Oh, here, some little kid should have this book, and I ripped out the important pages of like why it should be kept there or something like that.
That's, we've got a mystery on our hands.
Yeah, yeah, a Candlekeep mystery.
Ba, ba, ba.
Okay, yeah, so a number of different angles, you know, just the innocence of a child that's like, hey, I heard about this cool thing, and I care about my chickens. I want them to be warm all year long, so you should get this sunstone, you know, okay. Or, you know, the kid was given the book, mysteriously found it, and then read about it, and then is just like, been obsessed with this idea of getting it, but obviously he's a kid. He's got to take care of the chickens. He can't go get the sunstone. So the adventurers come by and he, you know, gives them this tale, this mission. Okay.
Yeah. His payment for these heroes, eggs.
Okay. So that's the reward. So if they succeed, they bring him the sunstone. He puts it, he inters it in a place of honor within this coop. Now suddenly very comfortable and the chickens love it. So he's going to reward them with eggs.
Absolutely. And he's going to get the best eggs.
Mm.
He says, you know what? This is the quest that really will set my coop apart from other coops. I don't know if there are many other coops that have a sunstone kicking around. I don't think so.
Right.
He's very proud of it now. But they've got a variety of chickens. So they have eggs that are kind of blue. They've got eggs that are speckled. He finds the best, largest, most beautiful eggs. And he puts them in a basket that is brightly colored. Maybe there's some chocolates also in this basket.
Mm.
And that really annoying little shredded paper nonsense. And he puts a nice bow at the top. And it is an Easter basket full of the best eggs that his hens could make.
Wow. Do they have to come back in order for the, like in Zelda or any of these other games that we've loved growing up? It's like, oh, come back in 3 days and then I'll have your Easter basket ready.
Yeah, you know what? They'll have a little bit of a period. He's like, I need these girls, these ladies, to cook up a good batch now that they've got their sunstone. So if you return in a couple days, we'll have this. I need to get this right. Also, I need to ask my mom if it's cool if I use one of her baskets, because I mean, I just can't go in there and grab one of her baskets. She weaves them by hand. I need to ask first.
Right.
But she gives the okay because she thinks that he's just making up things, that he's making up stories. But no, there is actually a party of adventurers that have helped him get a mythical stone.
Mm-hmm.
But kids and their silly imaginations.
Right. Of course. Yeah. Okay. You were describing like these hens basking in the warmth of the sunstone. And then I was thinking like one chicken just like produces an ostrich sized egg. It's like, I don't know how that came out of you, but this is going to be probably like however many yolks inside of this egg. It's going to be delicious.
Yeah, it's huge. And it's in the center of the basket with like a little ring of the smaller eggs around it. Like it's the crown jewel of their basket.
Okay. And so then as time goes on, you know, the family is going to prosper, right? Because they have the sunstone now.
Absolutely. It'll be a very mild prosper. It'll just be an uptick in egg production and quality. I'm sure word will get around that they've got some really good eggs, but it is painfully mundane. It is nothing, no fame or fortune, because he's just a little guy. He does not actually think that this stone is worth anything other than this was in a book I read. But yeah, they get some mild attention in a positive way just for having a really awesome egg, you know. Love them eggs.
Yeah, I was gonna say some famous chef from the big metropolis over is like, oh no, I only go to this coop to get my eggs for the finest dishes that I charge a ridiculous amount of money for, because you know these are like organic fresh eggs from the farm, don't you know.
I got people all the way in El Terrell asking for these things. And you're like, wow, that's a lot. Is it still in Avernus? He's like, no, they came back up ages ago. And you're like, oh, okay.
Okay, all right. So then the we know the reward is going to be, you know, the players, the party is going to receive their own Easter basket as a show of appreciation and thanks from our young little Pyrex. But now I suppose we have to consider as well the consequence of failure or refusing the call to the adventure. So what's going to happen if the players say, well, no, we're not going to go all the way to the canyon and retrieve this sunstone wherever it may be, whether it's a trap laid in dungeon or if it's just really, really high up and nearly inaccessible to get it. What's going to be the consequence of failure or refusal?
Well, upon refusal, they outright just refuse. I feel like Pyrex would kind of take it, you know, in stride. Say, well, you know, I'm disappointed, but that, you know what, that's fine. I'm just, you know, I didn't really expect anything of it. You know, it's just a fun story. But he'd be a little disappointed. But at least if they're honest and they're like, that's a big job, buddy. You know. I think he'd take it pretty well, but if the party failed, there was this big buildup. He was really excited, got his hopes up. This party of adventurers made their way there and came back empty-handed. He'd be so disappointed. So the consequence would be a very disappointed little guy. If you've ever looked into the eyes of a child and said, "We are not getting McDonald's. We have food at home." That is the vibe. That is the vibe from Pyrex. But he's a good boy. So
okay.
He'd probably, you know what? He'd probably sniffle. He'd have a couple sniffles, but he'd go inside and his mom's like, "Here, I got you some chocolate milk," or whatever Herringon children love.
Chocolate milk sounds logical to me.
Chocolate milk, chalky milk, if you will. And and he'll literally forget about it in an hour. He's fine.
Yep. Having a 3-year-old. Yep, exactly. It's the biggest Oscar-worthy tantrum of your life. And then, yeah, a minute later, he's forgotten and moved on to the next thing. Yeah. Okay.
Meryl Streep quaking. And she said, No way I'll get the Oscar with this guy here on the docket. And then 2 minutes later, he's like, I don't remember where I was just now. So I'm going to just
go see my hens and just go hang out with them because they're nicer than my brothers and sisters.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Interesting. Okay. So we've discussed some of the implications or the lore. So it sounds like there's also like a secondary level as far as like, you know, so if they succeed in bringing the sunstone back, what does that mean for the wider community? Like, obviously you can specify if you want it to go super deep or not, but like what kinds of things should be happening or could we expect to be happening in the region, in the area, if the sunstone is removed?
I think the canyon will be far enough that they will have no idea of the repercussions of the canyon. The canyon plunged into darkness, probably in eternal winter. Who knows? Who cares? Ignorance is bliss. They don't have any idea. But the greater community around the sunstone in the coop will probably have easier winters. It won't be blazing hot, but I feel like the winters will be very mild. It'll be more of like a spring. The crops will probably do very well. Some of the plants that were maybe a little invasive, but are better off in warmer climates, those will kind of thrive. And it'll turn into, let's say, like a Florida, a northern Florida is what happens to this area. And they just, they can grow a lot of stuff. They're living and loving it.
Okay. So the, so it's kind of almost like an effect of like the Druid's plant growth spell. So it's like the, like within a mile or something like that. So it's like a mile within the Sunstone, like rich crops, the animals are doing great. So that has wider effects for the local community, like the rest of the farm. Suddenly, you know, maybe the older brothers and sisters are having to tend to some of the other animals. Suddenly, you know, the cows are making richer milk and cream. You know, the bacon is even more juicy and tender whenever we make that. And, you know, cheese is great. You know, all these other things that like doing this is going to, you know, help this local community within a mile of it. But then I was getting an image of my head from like Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, like the Shankara stone that's in the movie of like, oh, you know, the local community, you know, believes this is a sacred item and object, and it grants prosperity to that region and area. So if you steal it, take it from its place of resting in the canyon, you're dooming an entirely different you know, agricultural community that depended on the Sunstone in order to make that area thrive. Like you were saying, it plunges into winter, or there's just like a unnatural, supernatural sort of drought that overtakes it. And now there's like an abandoned town or something in the canyon, or, you know, hopefully you're not getting into the darker elements of like, oh, everyone starved and it was, you know, it was awful and stuff like that. You know, you could gloss that over and just be like, oh, there was a town here. And when you go back there to check it out, because it was like you just beelined for the Sunstone and completely ignored the farming village or whatever. No one's there anymore. Like it's abandoned.
Yeah. They evacuated. They're all fine. But they were like, dang, what is up with this random bout of drought, this drought bout, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, nobody in town knows why suddenly they've had an onslaught of more positive growth in all aspects. No one has any idea, because no one even would think that this kid had something so valuable, and it's tucked up in a chicken coop somewhere. So
it's just
there, and there's no rhyme or reason. I like to think that it was enough of a, maybe they were already heading into spring, so it wasn't as noticeable, and they just thought it was a really good season, and it's just been like that since.
Yeah. And so as the players continually come back to Pyrex, because obviously Pyrex has the best eggs that they know of, and word starts spreading, and everyone's like, huh, this area all of a sudden is just doing really well. We have no idea why. Shrug. Oh, well, I guess we're blessed by the druids or something.
Yeah.
Keep going on. Meanwhile, this other community in the canyon and the surrounding area just turns more into a desolate wasteland, and everyone's like, oh, we've been suffering, you know, in such misery over here. Like so many towns have had to abandon the local area in this canyon area over here because like nothing can grow anymore or whatever it was.
Yeah. Unfortunate for them. Fortunate for the Herengons.
So, okay. So that's the greater impact then as far as taking the Sunstone from its resting place. So that could, I guess you would think, reasonably feed into a reason as to why they could fail. Like if they actually go to the community and they talk to them and they're like, no, that thing is there for a reason, because if we didn't have it there, we'd all, like, you know, we wouldn't be able to farm and live here anymore, because if the Sunstone's taken out, then our way of life here can't exist, kind of a thing.
Definitely. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And then of course, as we've discussed, you know, if they break it to, you know, a little Pyrex and say, sorry, buddy, we couldn't do it. We lost it, or, you know, we couldn't get it. Then, you know, he's sad, and you have to live with that on your conscience. But, you know, in 5 minutes, he'll be fine. So kind of really interesting. Yeah, kind of a very information sensitive, depending on if your players really care or not to investigate this thing the whole way through.
Absolutely.
All right. And then do you feel like that pretty well fleshes out the character, or were you interested in exploring some of these more optional questions?
I think we covered the impact made on the world for sure.
Sure.
And, you know, I think I like the question of how does it affect the general personality of our little guy?
Yeah.
I think too, he's humble enough where he doesn't really know the actual importance and power of this stone. And I'm sure that, like many other things in childhood, as he grows up, he's probably even forgotten that was something he ever got. So he just grows up and starts his own family and lives prosperously. And he's, I like to think that it doesn't change him, because he just plumb forgets that there's any semblance of anything important about the farm. He just wants to do the best he can, and that's what drives him.
Interesting. Yeah, I was going to say, or if someone decides to take Pyrex and convert them into a player character, like the humble beginnings of a ranger or a druid or something like a MCDM, Beast Heart kind of a class.
Absolutely.
If you have your chicken companion that's like attack chicken. Or no, then it's like the Shmo Yoho chicken attack song.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. The Easter Bunny's going around and he has the chicken attack, you know, pecks your eyes out or something like that. That'd be very funny. But okay, so it's so cool. It sounds like we've got our character made, and now it's time to throw Pyrex into not a fire, but a random encounter. Random Encounter is brought to you by Zencastr. Now, ever since I've heard about Zencastr from Dane and Benjamin over at the Dispel Magic podcast, I've just been wildly impressed using this. It's what I've been able to get those podcasts recorded, and then I've been able to take the audio, get that edited, and get it out to you. It's so easy. It's now super easy to record a podcast with Zencastr. You log in using your browser. You start recording a high-quality podcast right away. You can record studio-quality sound and up to 4K video with your guests. Feel a sense of Zen knowing Zencastr's multi-layered backups ensure you always have your recordings of the highest quality, even if the connection is unstable. You can sound your best with Zencastr. Have you ever worried about what you might sound like? Why Zencastr's post-production process makes you sound buttery smooth. It automatically removes those ums and ahs in your recording, and it removes those awkward pauses in conversation too. Set the right podcast loudness and levels while reducing background noise with a click of a button. And I have to say, I took the advice from Anson, one of our wealthy level Patreon supporters, and I decided to get one of the paid plans. So now I have access to these tools. And if you've noticed in the last couple of episodes, you really should be hearing those same qualities come through in the edit. It's all in one. So if you have thought about starting a podcast before and you're realizing that you need a lot of different tools and services, well, those days are done. With Zencastr's all-in-one podcasting platform, you can create your podcast all in one place, distribute to Spotify, Apple, and other major destinations. Go to zencastr.com/pricing and use my code SIDEKQPODCAST and you'll get 30% off your first month of any Zencastr paid plan. I want you to have the same easy experiences I do for all my podcasting and content needs. It's time to share your story. So again, the code is SIDEKQPODCAST on the website zencastr.com/pricing. Thank you so much to the sponsor, and back to the podcast.
Gasp.
So this is the section where we get to now do a little bit of role play vignette. We get to play a little bit of D&D here and now as we get to do a scene with Pyrex. Don't have to adopt funny voices or anything like that, but if you're comfortable doing it, more power to you. But the question I have is, what kind of scene are you interested in showcasing Pyrex in? Is it going to be like Pyrex having a monologue with his chickens? Is it going to be Pyrex with his family and siblings and such? Is Pyrex encountering one of my podcast adventurer characters and trying to convince them to go and do the quest? What kind of scene are you interested in?
I like the idea of the adventurers coming back to claim their Easter basket, probably under the impression that it's not going to be that awesome. But that it turns out to be really awesome. Like, this is a cool basket. Anybody that likes anything as a gift is like, dang, that is a sick Easter basket. And I want him to beam with pride as he drags this basket because he is so tiny. I want him to beam with pride as these adventurers are like, that's actually a really dope basket, actually.
Okay, so we're taking it to the end where one of the podcast adventurer characters has already accepted the quest is now coming back to claim their just rewards.
Yes.
Okay, so we have a whole cast to choose from. So we have Duncan, who is the recklessly brave adventurer for hire, happy-go-lucky, chaotic good, no task too big, no feat too small, that sort of a guy. We've got Sonia, who's the warrior woman. She started off as a barbarian and then multiclassed into a paladin. She is a paladin who serves a god who seeks to redeem the undead. We have Chrisley, who is the herbalist, botanist, wood elf druid from the Woad, who then multiclassed into a cleric who serves the god of living memory. We have Korak, the lawful evil, arcane, trickster, roguish dwarf. I know I mixed up Korak and Chrisley because Korak comes before Chrisley in the order. We have Orion, who is the astral elf illusionist wizard. And then we've got Agape, who is the lilac-colored tiefling Sorlock. She started off as a wild magic sorcerer, Feywild stuff in her blood, and then she just recently multiclassed into an archfey warlock pact with Prosperina, one of the other NPCs made on this podcast. So with those characters in mind, you can choose one of those, or if none of those sound good, then you can make up a completely, we can make up a completely different one if you want.
I am a sucker for tieflings, so I'll have to go with Agape because I love tieflings so much.
Okay, Agape. All right. So then would you care to set the scene or would you like for me to set the scene?
I can set it up, get my imagination juices flowing. The farm is kind of muddy, kind of soppy from a recent rain, which with the sunstone won't be so much of a problem. There will be rain, but it won't be so dour as it is today. And, you know, it's that early spring. It's probably a little gray. And the hero returns with their satchel with that nice little stone tucked into it. It's nice and warm in the dour weather. And without much expectation, approaches this farm. There's a little chicken coop in the back, and they see a little tail, a little bunny tail sticking out. He's got his feet hanging out of this little door that lifts so that you can take the eggs from the side of the coop without having to go inside the coop. And he hears the approach of somebody on the farm, and he hops down and dusts himself off, probably licks his hand and smooths back his hair just to be presentable to this very lovely tiefling person. And he's got that. He's ready.
Yeah. And Agape had finished up her last adventure for Prosperina because they were back in the community. This mageocracy industrial sort of community that's forming up against nature. This one zone that, you know, this archfey Prosperina has been, you know, covertly working and trying to steer the society in the correct direction. So, you know, this is Agape having to go, you know, to the outskirts, and, you know, Prosperina, you know, was like, you know, hey, you know, we need to go back and report. And along the way, she had found, you know, this farm off the side, and, you know, the little sweet little Herengon asked, you know, Agape if she would help and go get the sunstone. And so she's a sucker for children and, you know, and being sweet. And so she, of course, agreed. Without consulting her patron about what this could mean. And so it took her some time to go over to the canyon to be able to retrieve it. We'll say with her sorcerer and her warlockness, she was guided by her sense of, you know, helping out the wishes of a child. And so she didn't stop at that community. She just was like, I mean, I can see it up there. I'll just go get it. No problem. And so then she came back and she happily is jaunting, and she'll say, hello, Pyrex, are you here? Hello?
He scurries out from behind the coop, dusts himself off. He's like, I'm here. I know I'm tiny. I'm here.
Oh, lovely to see you. Yes. I was just remembering my last adventure with Penance, the clairvoyant. She was fun. And she's having a grand conversation with Prosperina, so, you know, on the road back to headquarters, and this was easy to get for you. And she reaches into her satchel and she pulls out, you know, maybe it does kind of look like the Shankara stone from Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, but it like this amber golden rock that's, you know, egg shaped, but it's got some markings on it, you know, not too unlike maybe how some unique chicken eggs may appear. But, you know, about the, you know, fits well in the size of her hand. It would probably be a double handhold for Pyrex to hold on to. And she's like, well, here you go. Yeah, it was really easy to get up there. You know, some climbing. I had to, you know, get some big spiders out of the way. But yeah, we easy enough to get. It was just sitting there. So, yeah, here you go.
His eyes light up and he holds out his hands like, you know, the Oliver Twist asking for more gruel, please. And he takes it very gently. He says, this is the most beautiful egg I've ever seen. And he's just so full of joy, unaware, blissfully unaware of the consequences of the action of obtaining this. But that's not his problem. He's just a little guy. And thank you so much. Thank you so much. I'm so excited. I can't wait for the chickens to have this.
Wonderful. Wonderful. And so then, so easy enough to fast forward. You know, because he's insistent, like, oh, you have to come back after they've had their good soak. And, you know, she loves this little guy. And so she'll easily enough be able to go report back to her headquarters to relay some important messages that she needs for the organization. And she's making her way back and she makes it a point to stop by the farm because, you know, Pyrex asked her specifically, you know, hey, you better come back and check on me and check out these eggs. They're going to be awesome. And so she comes back and what's she going to see now that it's been a couple days and she comes back?
The once muddied field is now lush. There is the sign of significant growth, but the weather's been pretty nice recently. So that's not too much. The grass is always cropping up and, you know, it's spring. We're ready for it. Nothing too wild. The chickens are out doing their thing, eating all them little worms and bugs and digging around and just being chickens. They're great. They're living and laughing and loving. And Pyrex sees this lovely purple tiefling approaching on the horizon and he runs into the house and he comes back out. And as she approaches, he's dragging this basket along behind him. And he's like, I've got it, Miss Adventurer. I've got it. I've got your gift.
Oh my goodness. And then she'll come over to help him. And she like gets down to his level so she can see it. And she's like, wow, what? Tell me about these eggs. Tell me about this basket.
He is so excited. He's so excited. He points. He's like, I'm going to save the best for last. Don't get ahead of yourself. You know how kids act much older than they're supposed to. If she tries to put a hand on it, he just gently like taps her hand. No, no. I'll take you around. I need to take you on the tour. He points at a voluptuous, almost purplish. It's almost the same color as this tiefling. He's like, this one was Henrietta. Henrietta made this all by herself. Ooh. Super proud of her. Yeah. This one, I think you're going to like that one. The inside, it's going to be great. I recommend making mayo out of some of these and then an egg salad out of some others, but I'm getting ahead of myself. He's just a little grown up at this point talking about these eggs. He goes to a speckled blue one. He's like, this one is from Claudine. Claudine, we love her. She's really good at laying eggs. She's been a little bit spotty lately, but she came out real big for you. So you've got to thank Claudine. He's pointing around. He's naming every egg and every hen that they came from. And then there's that huge egg in the middle, this weirdly huge egg. How did this chicken not perish in the laying of this egg? We know not. But he puts his little hands on it and he's like, this was Paula. Paula made this egg. She's a trooper. She's doing great. She's out there. You could see her over there. And he like points to a gaggle of chickens. You do not know which one he's pointing to. He knows you'll, it's fine. Wow, Paula, she's lover. But he's like, this egg, you need to do something special. You'll have to let me know what you do with this one, because I can only imagine how much of a feast this egg's going to be for you guys. But yeah, this one's really cool. Really special. It's the biggest egg I've ever had. But I mean, you could feed a family of 55 with this egg. So, you know,
I believe you. Yes. Wow. Yeah. Everyone's going to love these. Yeah. I think Miss Prosperina will love them.
That makes me happy to hear, because this is probably the best eggs we've ever had. And I've seen a lot of eggs in my 2 to 3 years of life. Actually, for a rabbit, that would be ancient. So he's like, in my 5 months of life, this is some of the biggest eggs we've ever had.
And she is delighted. She's willing to take a little more time with Pyrex. And I think, you know, the scene is going to close out, and Agape has made herself a new little friend, and she's happy anytime to stop by the farm and get some more of these delicious eggs. But meanwhile, trouble brewing on the horizon with that canyon. We'll have to see if Prosperina has to come talking with Agape to figure out what's going on there.
Hey, have you noticed that there's just like a big dark patch in the middle of this area? What are we doing about that? Oh, the area I was just in? Don't worry about that.
And scene. Yeah, so I think we did it. So what did you think getting to play Pyrex?
I love Pyrex. He's the best little guy. You know, he's just, I think, exploring like simple pleasures in that he doesn't have forethought. He's a kid, and the all or nothing mentality of, like, you know, you mentioned having like the Oscar worthy meltdown of a child only to forget it really shortly after. This is just one of those adventures for any kid where something is the most important thing in the world, and within the week it's no longer anything that you think about. But the fact that this is something that's happened to him, he'll have a very pleasant memory. But as for the consequence, who's to say if he ever figures out what happened or connects any of those dots? But I think it's a fun playing children characters isn't something I get to do very often. But it's fun if you tap into it just being simple, them being right. Simple. Their motivations are very simple, and because I'm
honest, brutally honest as well.
Absolutely. And I just, all my characters have tragic backstories, but this little guy doesn't, except for the tragedy of the removal of the sunstone from the canyon. But hey, not his monkey, not his circus. You know what I mean? He doesn't know.
Right. Yeah. Maybe some creative DM will help assuage the guilt. And it's like, oh, it's like a canyon of evil or something like that. And they stole the sunstone many generations ago. So it could be like a good thing, that good quote unquote thing that happens, or at least makes you feel less guilty about it. But yeah, no, I mean, there's got to be balance and, you know, consequences and stuff like that. This is a real world and real people live in it. And so, you know, you got to live with your choices. And so maybe we'll see the next time Agape comes around, you know, maybe Prosperina has to go up to the farm and go talk with Pyrex and just be like, hey, we can't have this, you know, because of, you know, XYZ reasons or something like that. That'd be, you know, a very grown up conversation for Pyrex to have. But then, you know, does he forget it a week later or something? Who knows?
Who knows? He'll definitely have those memories of the biggest egg he ever did have.
Well, then who knows? Maybe it'll motivate him. Like you were talking about, he grows up and maybe he decides to, you know, return the sunstone, and he starts his chicken farm out there so that he knows he can get like the best chickens or whatever.
Absolutely.
There you go. Some potential world building lore that we've figured out here in the final thoughts section of the show. But I always like to leave this section for the guests. So, you know, any other pieces of feedback and, you know, what did you think of your time on the podcast and, you know, all that good sort of stuff?
I thought it was a blast. I love the idea of coming together just to make something that has potential and bring to life something kind of silly, you know, having all these names to pick from and all these different things. I think that's it's so fun. And I don't often get to do something like this. Actually, I've never gotten to do something like this. So I really enjoyed it. And I appreciate you having me. But yeah, feedback. I love it. That's my feedback.
Awesome. Yeah, no, I really do appreciate it. It's not just me fishing for compliments or something like that, or trying to stroke my ego or anything of that nature. So I'm just trying to provide a community service, if you will, with this little podcast. You know, finally made it past, I get 11,000 downloads in total now at this point, and five seasons. So I hope somewhere in this catalog there's NPCs that'll help populate worlds or be part of people's backstories for their characters and whatnot. And so who knows, Pyrex will maybe factor into yours. But before we close out the podcast, I always like to leave the platform, the stage, the microphone, the soapbox over to the guests. So where can people find you online? Where can we go to see some of your art, your work? Where can we support you? All that good stuff. And then are there any passions and causes we need to be made aware of?
I am, as I mentioned, I'm a mall mannequin. I'm a VTuber. So my Twitter is malldummyvt. And you can find me on Twitch. I stream art and I play some games, but I mostly draw on Twitch multiple times a week. And that's at just Mall Dummy. And yeah, you could pretty much, everything should be linked around from there. But if you feel so impassioned as to seek me out, you should be able to find what you need around there. As for any causes, I mean, nothing in particular, but I mean, just be kind, rewind, you know, and I don't know, just, I'm just a little guy on the internet, as many of us are, like I said. So, I mean, just be kind, be nice to people and be nice to yourself. And that's, that's about it. That's all I got.
Excellent. I think that's a great message to pass along. So Mandy, thank you so much for your time on the podcast. I can't wait to have you back on to make even more interesting NPCs.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Sidekicks and SideQuests. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast through Apple Podcast, Google Play, Spotify, Amazon Music, and Overcast, or feel free to save the RSS feed to use the app of your choice. If you don't like using podcast apps and services, I'm proud to announce that I'm in the process of uploading the podcast to our very own dedicated YouTube channel, which you can find by searching for Sidekicks and SideQuests. All future episodes should automatically publish to our YouTube channel. Visit our website, sidekicksandsidequests.com, for links, write-ups of the NPCs, and to learn more about the show and the guests who have been on it. To stay up to date and interact via social media, you can follow the podcast on Facebook, Instagram, and the corresponding threads, Twitter, now rebranded X, and Reddit, by searching for SideKQ Podcast. You can now also find a very tiny community on Discord as well. I would love to talk D&D and showcase your fan art, stories of how you used our NPCs, discussions, and commentary. If you'd like to hail the bard, simply send me an email at sidekicksandsidequests@gmail.com. To help this show be the resource it's meant to be, I ask that you please leave a review on iTunes. 5 stars, if you please. To help spread the word and share our podcast with your friends and family. Whether you're a veteran player or an aspiring dungeon master, there's something here for everyone, and I want to hear about it. As mentioned in the NPC creation section of the show, I do in fact have a Patreon for the podcast. If you love this podcast and you want to help support us and take our show to the next level, I would appreciate it if you would go to patreon.com/sidekicksandsidequests. No matter your lifestyle expenses, we have wonderful rewards at every level of Patreon membership tier. Modest, comfortable, wealthy, and aristocratic accommodations await, and we welcome all patrons to the Levitating Platter. Seriously, your financial support allows for this passion project to continue to invest in itself through the tools that will take our production to the next level, as well as provide more content for our patrons and the community at large. Please consider supporting me on Patreon if you can.
Sidekicks and SideQuests is unofficial fan content permitted under the fan content policy, meaning I'm not approved or endorsed by Wizards. Portions of the materials used are property of Wizards of the Coast.
Copyright Wizards of the Coast, LLC.
Thank you for your support, and I'll see you at the pub next time.
Bard rock on 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4!